With your help, we can continue to fight for freedom. This is not possible without your generosity. Join our quest for the truth and our freedom and donate today. Simply go to tntradio.live. You're with Rick Munn on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Yes, yes, yes. Our number two of Locked and Loaded today, Tuesday, the 19th of March, 2024. And yeah, the sun's shining here. Mind you, yesterday morning, when I started my shift, the sun was shining, the birds were singing, you know, the water was flowing gently through the brook behind my house, and life was looking good. But by the end of the show, the skies were grey. It was tipping down rain and the temperature had dropped a good 10 degrees Celsius. I kid you not, most people in Northern Ireland were commenting yesterday on how the day started off phenomenally well weather-wise and descended into typical Irish springtime weather, which is rain, overcast and wind, probably within the space of an hour. So make of that one what you will. This hour coming up, got Gemma Cooper, also Christian James will be joining me again. He works alongside Patrick Henningsen in 21st Century Wire, and also the wonderful Paul Kudnick will be beaming in from France. He runs Winter Oak Press. He's a fantastic researcher and writer. He's a very, very deep thinker, and I'll be talking to him before the top of the hour. Just looking at some of the comments, of course, which is great to be able to do again in the live chat. Molly Bites, by the way, Molly, I replied to your email last week. I'm not sure if you've got that reply yet or not, but if you're still on for hopping on for a little session on the show here this week, next week, or probably whatever suits you, let me know. Just double checking that you've actually got that email. Also, you've left a message in there to say you've had an idea. As the fake media is trying to bring down TNT, why not get a good lawyer in your show and have them explain the legalities of a TV license, etc.? Isn't it time TNT fought back against the fake media? Well, listen, sadly, it's not the fake media that are trying to bring TNT down. Fake media is the least of our problems, Molly. That's the big tragedy about all of this. But they're going to fail. And I'm not going to go into that in any detail. Do I look worried? Absolutely not. We're getting stronger by the day, not weaker. So life goes on. The show must go on. But the mainstream media and the fake media is not the source of our troubles right now, which would make it more bearable. But anyway, that's a story for another show. So we've got plenty on the cards here this morning. And by the way, if you haven't heard, Johnny Vedmore, who's a fantastic investigative journalist, writer and broadcaster, he has a new show starting today at 5 p.m. UK time, running through to 7 p.m. And Patrick, that other old stalwart of TNT Radio, Patrick Henningsen, is currently on vacation, I believe, in Arizona, getting some well-deserved rest. And then he will be back into the thick of it again, probably at the start of April. So keep your eyes on that one for a slot, probably sometime around whenever Johnny Vedmore finishes. So it's going to be a really strong UK early evening programming, as well as during the day and during the mornings as well. And, you know, sometimes when people are leaving here too, are stepping back for a while, you know, there's not always a sinister reason for that. Sometimes people do get burnt out and do get a little bit fatigued. And Patrick has been going hammer and tongs at TNT for the last, two and a bit years, as well as doing the 21st Century Wire stuff, as well as traveling extensively, as well as constantly talking and commenting on everything that's going on in the world at the minute. And he's taking a well-deserved rest. You know, when you actually work for a living, then you can step back and say you need a rest. There's a lot of chancers out there who don't know the bloody meaning of the word hard work. And, you know, they wilt at the first sign of pressure. Patrick Henningsen is not one of those people. So all being well, he will be back towards the start of April, which actually, according to my calendar, is about 2 weeks from now, 3 weeks from now. So hold tight. He'll be back with a very, very cutting edge show, even more so than the previous one. So I'm looking forward to him coming back as well. I've dubbed them, between you and I, you listeners and I, I've dubbed them the Kate Middleton of TNT Radio. That's Patrick, because he hasn't been seen for a long time and people are speculating, is he alive or not? Some people say that he's gone to Hungary for plastic surgery and he's going to come back as an Asian man. I don't know what's going to happen with Patrick, but he's very much alive and well, very much alive and kicking, and I am looking forward to him coming back as well. So leave us your thoughts and opinions in that in the live chat. Send me an email, rickmunn@tntradio.live. And I'm going to usher in the wonderful Gemma Cooper again. And we're going to pick up where we left off in the last hour, maybe throw a few other stories into the mix too for good measure here on TNT, Today's News Talk.
Keeping the commitment 24/7.
I come to you for facts. I really appreciate what you and your team do.
Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Gemma, someone put a post up this morning. My old friend Parallel Mike from Poland, he runs a podcast. He was on Locked and Loaded last week, and this is what he said. It's wild that of the 200 plus videos on my channel, the most controversial by far is my recent conversation with Rick Munn. That's me, by the way. It resulted in people unsubscribing, numerous angry comments, and a record number of downvotes. Can you guess which led to people being triggered? And we were talking about investments. We were talking about Bitcoin in particular. And, you know, we were advocating people research before they do any investments. Don't believe what I say. Don't believe what Mike says. Don't believe what anybody says. Do your own research. Come to your own conclusions. But apparently, that's a controversial line of thought at the minute. You should just blindly dive into the Bitcoin bandwagon. Don't ask any questions or else you'll be cancelled and unsubscribed and unfollowed. I think it's becoming a little bit cultish in some areas of the alternate media when it comes to certain things. Who would have thought somebody would have got triggered over being told to be cautious and think carefully before you go into this and then make up your own mind? Is that worth cancelling us and downvoting us and abusing us over?
Wow, I wasn't aware of that, actually. Mm. And, you know, it comes under the tenet of free speech. You know, but I mean, with free speech comes, you're free to say whatever you want about anything, but other people are equally free not to like it. And in this instance, they clearly didn't like it. I mean, I you know, I'm not qualified to talk about Bitcoin at all, so I don't know the validity of what was said. And in terms of, but I do know, all I do know is I worked at another alternative broadcaster and some people did put money into Bitcoin and they lost it. Mm. And I was watching from the sidelines because to me, and I'm older, it looks like some kind of central banking digital currency. Mm. That's what it looks like to me. And it's not tangible. But I know there are other people on TNT that completely disagree with that view. And I know, and if you're listening, I know
fine.
It's fine, isn't
that's
it? Fine. Yeah. Being cancelled over, I don't quite get, but things are very emotive. They can be very emotive.
If we follow it, we and I know the Bitcoiners are going to be reeling when you mentioned about CBDCs. Oh, we're not centralized and it's safe as a row of houses and you can't lose it. Listen, Gemma's just saying, this is what I think. You know, don't hate her for it or don't, don't hate me for what I say, or I'm not going to fall out with you over you being the world's biggest advocate of cryptocurrencies. If it works for you, do it. But what I find unusual about this is the almost, weird, you know, it's like a cult. If somebody disses the cult leader, the followers go crazy. You think about Charles Manson and you think about those girls that were dispatched to butcher Sharon Tate and, you know, Roman Polanski's wife and her baby inside her. You know, when Manson told them to shave their heads, carve a swastika into their foreheads and crawl into the court on all fours like animals, they did it. Young girls. So cults and their leaders are very, very, very tight together. And I'm not knocking, by the way, in case I get more aggravation. I'm not knocking Bitcoin or any investment. I'll reiterate this for those that missed it. Before you do anything, before you say anything, you print anything, you invest in anything, investigate, research. And then when you've done that, research some more and then come to your own conclusions. Don't take my word for it. Don't take anybody else's word for it. Do your own research. I didn't think that would be controversial in this age where we're told to question everything, Gemma.
No, it's a strange one. And I will add a caveat because I know how emotive this issue is. Mm. You know, I also know somebody that put money into Bitcoin and did very well and bought themselves a house. So I do see it from both sides. Absolutely do see it from both. I don't understand it. That's probably why I don't go near it. I don't actually understand it. If somebody wants to explain it to me, then I'll be more like, oh, okay, I see what this is now. And I haven't done any research into it myself. You know, I hold my hands up on that one. So I'm very happy to be proved wrong on the Bitcoin issue. I've seen someone make a lot of money. I've seen other people lose money. So, I mean, that just sounds like a normal financial market, doesn't it? Sometimes you win, sometimes you lose, but it's differently run, I guess. I mean, I will shut up on Bitcoin now because I'm not qualified at all to talk about it. But yeah, it's obviously generated a lot of thought and a lot of emotion.
controversy, more controversy following me around. It's following me around like a plague of flies at the minute. But I don't care because, you know, it's publicity. And as they say, there's no such thing as bad publicity, and I'm not having to pay for it either, Gemma. News, let's talk about the news. A few items you touched upon in the last hour. Anything else to add to the mix before we delve into those things?
Well, actually, I heard you talking with our political editor, Basil Valentine, about the Kate story. And I just wanted to add something to that, that Basil was saying he wasn't sure that Kate was bloodline. Actually, William and Kate are related. Any kind of lingering doubts that the royal family does like to keep it in the family can be dispatched. They're actually 14th cousins once removed through the bloodline that comes through Diana, and 15th cousins through Charles and various relatives on Kate's family tree. And I do remember this from the time before they got married, and the big hoo-ha around the engagement is a lot of headlines came out saying they're related. And I thought, what a surprise. Harry and Meghan, also related, 15th cousins due to her maternal line, one of her great-great-great-great-great-grandmothers. There's all kinds of stuff in there that they are keeping it in the family. The bloodline links are definitely there, and it would probably be worth digging in some of the more minor royals and their children and seeing how the bloodlines have come through, because that is why it's not called blue blood for nothing. That is not a conspiracy theory. That's an absolute fact. You can trace it back through Burke's peerage, all of the books of ancestry, royals, all of that. They're related. Kate and William are related. So in terms of, you know, does she have to curtsy? Maybe not. Maybe she's more royal than we realise. And nothing ever happens by accident with the royal family, including all the debacle that's going on now. But certainly I wonder if there was an element of selection in who Prince William decided eventually to marry.
They say, you know, that old expression, keep it in the family. I think the royal family have taken that to the nth degree. And I was going to make comment about banjos and hillbillies, but I'm not going to do that. If you've ever seen the film Deliverance, you'll know what I'm talking about, the dude with the banjo and all that. But anyway, maybe that'll be William in the remake Deliverance. They'll stick William up on a little veranda with a little rocking chair and give him a banjo and tell him to go for it. But anyway, I digress slightly here. A little bit of advice. This is just something that picked up. I think you're going to like it. Some guy put a post up this morning, said, I was told I would die if I didn't get the COVID shots, but I didn't die. I was told if I didn't fight discrimination, if it's only against white people, I'm currently suing a company who told me they don't hire white men anymore. I was told I would never work in comedy. If I say the things I say, I'm selling out comedy clubs around the country soon and the world. This is an American comic based in New York. And basically what he was saying was, Gemma, be careful who you take advice from. Very careful. I went against 100% of what those close to me in my life told me to do, and 100% of my dreams have now come true. So I think that links in as well with motives of people or taking people at face value. You know, everybody's out there, everybody has their angle in some way, shape or form, and everybody's got their own agenda. And because somebody's smiling at you and luring you and wooing you a certain direction, it's not necessarily for your benefit, it's probably for theirs. And when they've used you and possibly abused you, they'll scrunch you up like a Kleenex and dump you into the rubbish without thinking twice about it. So be careful who you listen to, I think is a very salutary lesson for the day.
Yes, that sounds like there's more going on in the Rickman brain there than there's something
lots
behind
going
that
on
statement.
In my brain, lots going on. Someday I will open my mouth and a torrent will come out. But as for now, I am just observing things as a casual observer from the sidelines in many ways, Gem, in many areas of life.
Well, I'll bring some news, I think, to calm the mix down. We did talk about the cost of childcare, didn't we, at the top of the last hour. We didn't really have time to delve into that story, but it is affecting millions and millions of parents across the UK because local council places for children under the age of two are like hen's teeth now. You can hardly get into any of them. It's forcing parents to go private and borrow money to pay for childcare. And in some instances, travel out of the country, travel out of England into Wales, across the bridge to access childcare places. Parents are saying they have no choice. There are waiting lists now for state-funded places until 2025. Some private nurseries have waiting places till 2025. And parents that now, there's a lot of controversy about farming your children out from a young age, but a lot of parents now are saying because of the cost of living, because basically when women entered the workforce, all the corporations did was halve the salaries and say, yeah, you can come and work for us, we'll still pay the same. Now every family has to have two breadwinners, otherwise people just simply can't make ends meet. And there are state-funded places for childcare, but the problem being, of course, is there just aren't enough of them. Local councils just don't have the spaces. The average cost for a full-time nursery place for a child under the age of two is more than £15,500. Most families these days in the UK have more than one child. So you can do the maths with that one, Rick, and you can see how hard up families are just for paying someone to look after their kids. With another story on money as well, last hour we talked about how electric vehicles are being blamed for the 2 million potholes on the region's roads. Their war on motorists does continue. As from today, dozens of local councils have applied for the right to fine motorists for yet more misdemeanors on the roads. I mean, these are small misdemeanors, things like making U-turns where you're not supposed to, going the wrong way down a one-way street, going into a bus lane, really simple, basic motorist maneuvers, stopping in yellow boxes when your right of way is not clear. Nearly half of England's councils are now going to fine drivers up to £70 for any one of those offences, with road campaigners saying motorists now feel like wallets on wheels, and all this is a revenue scheme for cash-strapped councils. And Birmingham and Nottingham, the two councils, biggest councils that have declared bankruptcy, have, yes, applied for this new powers to fine motorists. So motorists are facing it every turn, aren't they? You can't do anything on the roads now without being fined, it seems. And you can't even drive on the roads because they're not fit for purpose, with 2 million potholes and nearly 100,000 roads at risk from never being able to be used again. So that's just another snapshot of the beleaguered Britain, I think we call it. Katie Hopkins used to call it batshit bonkers Britain. I think we'll call it beleaguered. Beleaguered motorists, beleaguered parents, all of them feeling the pressure right now.
And broke, don't forget broke, okay? So it's bad shit, it's beleaguered, and it's broke as well, because a lot of people are struggling, especially to pay those exorbitant nursery fees. Imagine that, two kids, 15 grand a head. You'd have to be out busting your ass, Gemma, earning 30 grand a year after tax and national insurance has been taken, to just pay someone else to look after your sprugs while you commute in and out of London, eat your limp ham and cheese sandwich for lunch in your cubicle, and then commute your ass back home again, surrounded by smelly people, getting in at 7 o'clock at night, having a pot of ambrosia creamed rice for dinner, and then getting into bed before getting up at 5 o'clock in the morning and doing it all again. It makes it sound so appealing, doesn't it? Having a family these days, maybe that's part of the depop agenda as well. But anyway, thank you so very much. Great to see you back again today, and all being well. I can say it again today. We will reconvene in the morning, 10 a.m. UK time. You'll be on again with James in the next hour, but that's Gemma Cooper. Got to take a break. Welcome Christian James back on again to continue the conversation that we had on Friday before time brutally cut us short, but he's back again to continue after the break on TNT. Don't go away.
TNT's Chris Smith.
I can tell you that Donald Trump is projected to win primaries in the states of Texas, Minnesota, Colorado, Virginia, Maine, Massachusetts, Arkansas, Alabama, Oklahoma, Tennessee, and North Carolina. And in a little bit of a turn up, the northeastern state of Vermont looks to have gone to his rival, his final rival, the former United Nations Ambassador Nikki Haley. Now, Nikki Haley's team has said that she won't be speaking tonight. That has been construed by many of the reporters in that location as she's about to exit the race in the next 24 hours.
Chris Smith on today's News Talk, TNT.
Affordable housing, we can build that. Sustainable housing, we can build that. At MIT Modular, we understand the importance of housing for all and the importance of design, cost, and functionality. Our goal is to meet the needs of our growing population by converting shipping containers to livable units. If you're like-minded and in a position to invest in something meaningful and life-changing, we want to hear from you. We are a team of professional architects, engineers, and financial and tax experts dedicated to offering unique solutions that provide a brighter future. Our Opportunity Zone Fund offers investors both real estate and operating business diversification, 5-year tax deferral on capital gains, annual tax benefits, and ultimately tax-free appreciation potential. There are Opportunity Zones all over America. If you're interested in learning more about our services, need affordable housing, or want to participate in creating a new vision for tomorrow, give us a call in the U.S. on 385-985-5702 or read more at mitmodular.com. MIT Modular. We can build that.
today's News Talk Radio.
Now we're talking.
TNT.
Yes, TNT, today's News Talk, and I'm picking up a conversation that I was having last Friday, I think it was, with the one and only Christian James. Welcome back, Christian. He is a content creator and researcher for the wonderful 21st Century Wire, Patrick Henningsen's other love child, or legitimate child, I don't care what you call it, but it's a really good media outlet, one that actually I was introduced to before I even came to TNT. Follow Christian on X or Twitter at 2121 Christian, spelt with a K, Christian James, and see what he has to say there. Welcome back, by the way, and how are you doing this fine? I see you've got a 21st Century Wear t-shirt.
Yeah,
on as well.
I thought I would sport the wares, you know. There's a shop at 21 Wear. You can buy some t-shirts there and support the business. Yeah. But no, ultimately, I wanted to come back to you. I wanted to follow up on a conversation that we began to have last week in regards to the European Media Freedom Act. That got it got passed into law last Wednesday. And okay, strictly speaking, it doesn't really affect the UK, because the UK has already gone ahead with this and already has something quite similar in regards to our Digital Media Act. So, but this, of course, TNT has a large audience. And of course, we need to understand how it affects those living in Europe, particularly those in France, Italy, and across the rest of the European continent. So this is really an important piece of legislation that's been brought in now. It's been on the kind of the back burner for about 4 years now. It's been around since 2020. So it kind of comes out of the COVID situation, that controlling narrative, and to make sure there only is one narrative in the media. It certainly has that as its a bit of its birth child. But so what happened to the European Parliament on last Wednesday? They voted in favor to bring in this legislative law. The votes actually were really interesting. There was 464 votes in favor, and only 92 were against this. So what it aims to protect journalists and media freedom. So when I said to you that this is a sword of Damocles, I mean that quite literally. There is some things in here that actually really are good in terms of protecting a journalist and protecting their sources, protecting their individual rights. So, for instance, a government cannot come after you if you are revealing information about the state or the information that you need to protect your sources. So in many ways, it is seen as a bit of a benefit. It is sold on those benefits. However, it has the opposite effect. So what this means is that potentially journalists can be spied on. Spyware concerns can be installed on your devices, and that is legitimately allowed as part of this law in here. So if I was to read a statement that came out of the Civil Liberties Committee, who reacted on the very day, the very kind of people you typically would find who would support the truth movement and those who are against such policies and against such things coming in, like Mozilla or the EFF and so on, they are in support and in favor of this. So Ramona Strigario, she said that journalists now have a set of tools to protect them and the face of the challenges. And she quotes, and I say this, the regulation is in response to Orban, Fico, Janser, Putin, who want to transform media into a propaganda tool and to spread fake news and destabilize the democracies of Europe. So this is seen as it's a wonderful piece of legislation. It protects journalists. It's about free speech. It's about truth. It's about the idea that you can have benefits for journalists out there and protect them and their sources. Mm-hmm. However, of course, it on the other hand, you have Claire Daly speaking about this as well in regards to how this is now legitimizes the use of spyware against journalists. And they can be continuously monitored to make sure they are protected. But when you talk about journalists being recorded, you kind of wonder what else is that about. So these new laws and these new media will now have to report funds, including state advertising. So if you are a media body, you must now put publicly where your advertising comes from, where your finances come from, which again, from our point of view, could actually be really useful. However, do you really think they're going to say where their funds come from? Are BBC Media in Action really going to be saying that the World Economic Forum is their main sponsor? Is it going to be like the Freedom Process, what's it called? George Soros's organization, the Open Society, sorry. Do you really think they're going to be putting that up there? I don't think so, because there's almost inevitably going to be the funder. And I think it potentially has the option to allow people like ourselves at TNT or those out there in the open community forum actually to start putting more pieces together about you know, we've all seen those posts over the years about who owns what company. Potentially, this could be quite useful and bring those tools together to see, hey, you are sponsored, you are controlled. So when I use the sort of Democles as the analogy here, I think I really mean that.
Do you know what we'll do? You said a lot of very important points there. I want to pick up on them and I want to get your response to that. We've only got a couple of minutes before we take a headline break. Let's take it now so we keep the momentum going up until the top of your slot here. So we'll take a brief pause, Christian, for some headline breaks. And when we come back in 30 seconds, I want to lift up on some of what you're saying, especially with regards to funding and some of the stories that we're seeing coming through now, where the British government is now putting a ban on overseas investors owning British printed media. There's no talk about broadcast media ownership there, but is this the beginning of a further tightening on who can own what within certain countries, obviously, to disseminate information to the people? So we'll do that when we come back. Stay tuned for more here on TNT, today's News Talk.
We're ready.
News.
The news
is our business, and we never close.
TNT Radio News.
Matt Boylan here with a look at your TNT headlines. We're being warned to brace for an avalanche of new deaths in Gaza, not from combat, but rather starvation. The White House is refusing to admit whether it's still working with social media companies to censor speech it doesn't like. And the internet has been set alight after footage emerged of former US President Barack Obama paying a surprise, unannounced visit to British Prime Minister Rishi Sunak in London.
Globalist agendas, democratic rights at risk, corruption, propaganda. It never stops. For the news and views silenced by the mainstream media, by government and corporations, vote one. TNT Radio. Free speech always has a home here. Stay up to date with the latest live news and current affairs delivered by our lineup of expert commentators and hosts. Listen to TNT Radio anywhere you go. Ask Alexa or Google to play TNT Radio or download the TNT Radio app for free from the App Store or Google Play. Today's News Talk. This is TNT Radio.
Yep, TNT, today's News Talk, and today we are talking about the news with Mr. Christian James. Christian, you mentioned about funding for media outlets. We're seeing a lot of screws being tightened off Comer, particularly going after GB News at the minute, saying that they're breaching regulations, they want to fine them. They're talking about moving to digital-only platforms because it's not really viable these days to keep huge television studios open and pay TV operators when most people actually consume their media on streaming platforms like what we're doing at the minute or what you guys do over in 21st Century Wire as well. The subject of backers, Basil and I covered a story just before you came on at the top of the last hour to say that state ownership or ownership of British printed media would not be open to foreign investors going forward. They don't want foreign investors owning British printed media. It doesn't apply to broadcast media at the minute. Can we see this tightening down further? That really what the government want to do is they want to get their claws into the media that's broadcasting out of their country and make sure that there's nothing going out there that they don't really know about or that they can't really ultimately control.
I can see why they would want to do that. They'd want their control back in purpose. And I guess the government's in the UK, and I guess every other country, really, you want the narrative going out to the public to be one unified voice, amplifying what you are saying for you throughout your press contacts. I guess the idea is that if you have, opposing views or different message, you lose that kind of one blanket statement. Of course, you got the BBC. What do they call it? They have a particular program, don't they? It came in during the COVID situation where all media has to parrot one particular voice. And that was also including like Fox ownership, Fox, CNN, Euronews, the BBC, Sky News. So if there's a government legislation piece of information out there, it has to be blanket and recorded, put out across the same way. I think it's called the BBC Media One initiative. To make sure that there is no dissenting voices or a difference of opinion. So, yeah, I can see this would be perhaps a kind of consolidation of that piece of legislation there.
Yeah, interesting the way things are moving. There's no doubt there's a seismic shift going away. You know, when you think about the old days of the broadsheets and, you know, news agents, we talked as well about news agents going out of business. You remember kids used to have jobs delivering newspapers to people's houses. That is dead and buried. And even TV licenses, you know, people have always grumbled about the TV license and threatened to cancel their BBC licenses. Now, I think at more time than ever, and it's happening in the Republic of Ireland too, people are just not paying them. Don't pay any attention to the mainstream media anymore, or they're certainly a lot more skeptical about it. And whilst it does open doors of opportunity for ourselves, also that is going to attract a lot more regulatory attention. I am sure that they are chomping at the bit, Christian, to get their teeth into us in the like a 21st century world. When you think about the amount of truth that we're pumping out on a daily basis to counter their incessant stream of lies, you know, we must have our cards marked, surely.
Yeah, you can imagine like the UK column, for instance, you know, certainly anything that talks about, you know, counter narrative or disseminates the information, well, with, you know, with analysis, I think, and with it's counter to the view. And I mean, we can use COVID as a really good example, because, of course, all the messages that we were given as the public all turned out to be incorrect. And we all know that now. We're in a position where we've been informed. We have taken data. We've taken information, even from professional sources. We know that the kind of things that were putting out there were incorrect because they were following the science. And we also were following the science. So I think that this is their this is their methodology going forward. And it all has to be a very narrow band piece of information, and to get everyone on board is going to be what they're after. Ofcom, of course, they brought into new laws, I think it was only in January, in regards to controlling as part of the Digital Media Act, where they can I think they can fine effectively anything that's outside of the narrative, you know, or anything that it breaches entertainment and broadcasting, that whether they are indifferent from each other. Sorry, I think it's where if you are disseminating the news, for instance, you must say this part is entertainment, this part is opinion, this part is fact. If you don't follow that, you know, you can be liable for a fine. And that's one of those things where actually that's considered to be on the ground quite a sensible option to do. But actually what it does is that it enables only their narrative to exist, and a counter perspective or a counter view or an alternative opinion cannot even be discussed, let alone, you know, shown out there and broadcast.
On that subject about an alternative view that can cause damage to the current narrative that the government is pumping out, another area that you would look into and that we were pegged to discuss last Friday, we didn't get time to do it, was to do with the whole ULEZ shenanigans that's happening in London at the minute. So obviously it's being punted out there by Sadiq Khan that this is going to be good for people's health, it's good for the environment, it stops climate change, yada, yada, yada. But the reality is it's just another robbery on motorists, it's another attack on motorists, it's another attacking people's wallets during the so-called cost of living crisis. But he put out a statement last Friday, actually, to say that ULEZ has helped London cut road pollution faster than the rest of the UK. Sadiq Khan hails remarkable progress in air quality, with nitrous NO2 pollutants lower last year than in the lockdown year of 2020. Number one, how the hell can you even validate those claims? And number two, do you think the average Londoner walking around London or cycling around London or outside of a vehicle is going to say, yeah, I can feel the purity in my lungs now as I'm walking down Regent Street or Oxford Street, you know, or where does he get away with making these ridiculous claims?
I'm aware also that, I don't know if it was last week or the week before, the ASA, the Advertising Sales Agency, basically has fined the Transport for London, and particularly Sadiq Khan's program out there, because the amount of unpaid fines and the amount of non-compliance that's happened in regards to this. I mean, I read a bit of data. Actually, I've just pulled it up behind the scenes here. For 20 and 2021, there's 16.8 million unclaimed fines that have been issued, basically have not been paid. And of course, you've got these guys like Blade Runners running around and cutting them all down. Mm-hmm. And what you are seeing is how councils are now or re-evaluating their profit stance is now saying roll that ULEZ system out across the country, really. Birmingham, of course, have actually raised it higher than London in regards to their costs in order to recoup their current situation and being 750 £48 million in the red. You got like Nottingham's doing it. Obviously, Oxford quite famously has done it. Basically, it's to control the city centre. But you look at those city centres, it's just Shutter City. There's no business going on, no trade there outside the big, large corporation shops and like takeaways and so on. Your Corals and your William Hills are doing relatively well, but and your charity shops are. But there's actually nothing on the high street that makes any city stand out anymore because all the shops are gone.
Yeah, the bookies, I did a little walk around in the town that I've moved into. Well, it's technically a city, but a city in Northern Ireland is like a large village in England, okay? So for us to get city status, all we need is a cathedral somewhere and a post office, and we're a city. So the city in which I live at the minute, I had a walk around. It's a beautiful place, by the way, but the high street has really been hammered. Certain parts of the town have been devastated financially and economically with various things. But the one thing that seems to be able to stand against everything is two things. One is bookies and the other one is massage parlors. They're springing up more and more, and obviously nail salon Saigon Nails is doing very well here, and of course the ubiquitous Turkish barbers. For a town or a city so small, we can comfortably accommodate at least 10 Turkish barbers.
I can speak to some authority on that. So about a year ago, I went to where I work, rather, is one of those kind of multicultural mountain pots of a business. Mm-hmm. Along that same street is a place called Young Enterprise, and what they do, they fund and they support people obviously trying to find a job, young people, people who've come into this country. And I spoke to one of their representatives, and he told me something really interesting. What he says to me is that if you come here from, particularly from Armenia, from Turkey, from certain places in the Middle East, actually the government give you £5,000 for free to start a business. And what they all do, they all start a takeaway, they start a Turkish barbers, because effectively they are businesses that don't require a skill. Okay, it might require some skill to do food cooking, but regards to a barbers, nail salons, there's no skill or trade necessary to open those businesses up. And then you're charging like £15, you know, £25 a pop. And that's why they're popping up everywhere, because the government has given them money for free to start those businesses.
Yeah, so incentives are there, a little bit like subsidies that people are getting to stick solar panels on their roofs or even to buy EVs. The government are quick to dip the hand there. But then when the dream becomes a nightmare, where are the government to pick up the pieces? That is the question. Christian, really want to appreciate you hopping back on. I do believe we put that information business to rest. And obviously, of course, we covered a little bit of you last too, and a little bit of Turkish barbers and Saigon nail salons thrown in for good measure, just to keep but, you know, balanced. But I really appreciate your contributions this morning. That's Christian James. You can follow him at 21 Christian James on X or Twitter, whatever platform you decide to use. Many thanks to you. Hope you have a great day. And we'll stay in touch and hopefully talk again sooner rather than later. So we've got to take a pause right now. And when we come back at the other side, we've got Paul Kudnick beaming in from France, who runs Winter Oak Press, fantastic researcher and writer and orator. So please stay tuned for that before the top of the hour here on TNT, Today's News Talk.
When the world's endangered animals need help most, when their lives are at greatest risk, when they would otherwise be lost, the International Fund for Animal Welfare is there, taking action to rescue the animals we love, to protect them and their threatened natural habitats. But the danger to animals the world over is growing, and the need for your help has never been more urgent. On land, you'll help stop poachers from threatening and killing elephants and big cats for the illegal wildlife trade. In the oceans, you'll help rescue dolphins, whales, and seals from deadly hazards. And you'll help rescue, rehabilitate, and release vulnerable animals when disasters strike. Here at home and around the world, we can't do this work without you. See how you can help animals and people thrive together at joinifal.org.
Food isn't just fuel to live, it's fuel to grow. My family relied on public assistance to help provide meals for us. These meals fueled my involvement in theater and the arts as a child, which fostered my love for acting. The Feeding America network of food banks helps millions of people put food on the table. When people are fed, futures are nourished. Join the movement to end hunger, and together we can open endless possibilities for people to thrive. Visit feedingamerica.org/act now.
Informative and engaging. Rick Munn on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Yes, informative and engaging. I try anyway. Don't always succeed, but I try my level best here on TNT Today's News Talk. This is Locked and Loaded, and I'm happy to be joined again by a rather chirpy looking, I hope he doesn't mind me saying it, but I like it. When a guest starts the show with a smile, it makes me a little bit happier, and hell, I need all the happiness I can get in my life right now. Paul Kudnack. Paul is joining us. He's beaming in from France. He runs Winter Oak Press, a fantastic publication, by the way, which I encourage everyone to support on Substack, Winter Oak on Substack, but also they have a website, winteroak.org.uk, and also on the extra Twitter platform at Winter Oak Press. They're a non-profit organization spreading ideas and information about social, environmental, and philosophical issues. So welcome back, Paul. How are you doing this fine day?
Yeah, I'm doing fine, thank you. Spring's in the air. So yeah, that's probably why I'm smiling, you know, down this way anyway. I don't know what it's like where you are, but...
Well, actually, it's pretty damn nice right now. Today is beautiful, and I am... I like my seasons. I like the demarcation of seasons. Spring has always been my least favorite season. I'm a big fan of autumn and summer and winter. I like spring, but on a scale of 1 to 4 in the seasons, it always ranked number 4. But I don't know why, but this year it has leapfrogged to the number 1 position. I'm appreciating the chirping of the birds. I'm appreciating the blue skies right now. I'm appreciating that little bit of sunshine, that little bit of heat. And I think, hell, we need that to give us a little bit of a lift at this time, Paul, from nature itself. From nowhere else.
Yes. Yes. We certainly need something to cheer us up, don't we, with the from the state of the world, like the WEF, of course.
Well, you know what? This conversation of ours started beautifully. We're talking about nature and springtime and the world and birds and blue skies and all that. But let's bring it right down. Let's dive straight back into the old cesspit, which is where we have crawled out from. There's a lot happening in the world at the minute. I've got a few news articles here. I just want to get your take on them, but we'll keep it tongue in cheek. We'll keep it a little bit lighthearted as well. We don't have to take this stuff too seriously. So one thing in particular that I've highlighted here is let's look at Germany. You're not too far away from Germany at the minute where you live. So Germany is running out of money and debt levels are exploding, warns German's finance minister. So obviously they've been getting it tight, probably in a big way for the last 2 years since the whole shenanigans was going on in Ukraine, Russia. Germany sort of, you know, energy dependent on Russia to an extent. There was a lot of cutoffs going on there. So German finance minister Christian Lindner is warning his own government that state finances are quickly growing out of hand and the government needs to change course and implement austerity. However, the dispute over spending is only expected to escalate with budget shortfalls causing open clashes among the three-way left liberal coalition running the country. Is there anywhere that's not suffering this? We're just hearing about it from Germany at the minute. Is there any country that could honestly look at its balance sheet? You're in France. Could Macron really look at the balance sheet and say, you know what? We're actually doing pretty good, guys. We're looking good for the future. Britain, could Ireland say that? Can America say that? How long can this facade of prosperity continue before the whole thing comes down?
Yeah, it's looking pretty grim, isn't it? I know people who say that it's a controlled demolition as well. So it's the amount of money that has been flowing out of Europe into Ukraine is extraordinary, isn't it? There just doesn't seem to be any break on it or any scrutiny of it. It's just, oh no, they need more money, send it. And at the same time, the people living in those countries are being told that there isn't the money for health and education and all of the other things that and subsidies for farmers and everything else that might seem to the naive to be more important than funding this foreign country and its rather hopeless war against Russia.
Mm-hmm. But the money printing went into overdrive, as we know, and I can't believe it's been 4 years. I keep saying 2-3 years ago, you know, when the scandemic started, but it's now the best part of 4 years. It was March 2020, whenever people were told to go home, stay at home, protect the NHS, save lives. Furlough payments were given out for people to literally stay at home, getting 80% of their wages. And initially, I can remember at the time, this was long before I ever got into all this, I can remember thinking, well, you know, I have a little bit of an economics background, but how the hell are the government going to pay the entire British workforce to stay at home for 2 to 3 months or even 3 to 4 weeks at the time? Because remember, it was 3 weeks to flatten the curve. Where are they getting the money to pay all those wages, 80% of people's salary? And then, Paul, those 3 weeks turned into 3 months, and then the 3 months turned into 6 months, and the 6 months at one stage turned into 18 months that the government was paying people not to be working. Surely there was always going to be a payback for that, but people just didn't seem to see it.
Presumably it's all debt, isn't it? It's like in the World Wars, they go on, and the governments have to borrow more and more money, and the total of world, the amount of debt that every country in the world owes, I've saw it somewhere, but it's just phenomenal. But who do they owe it to? How can the world, a planet, and the people in this world all owe money, all be in debt to some other entity? What is that? Well, it's other human beings, obviously, but we all know what it is. It's the global banking system. Mm-hmm. So you then start to look at what happened. It's other human beings, obviously, but we all know what it is. It's the global banking system. Mm-hmm. So you then start to look at what happened in wars, and also what happened during COVID, and what's continued to happening in Ukraine. And it just looks like just a continuation of a racket that has been carried out for many years now. Except it's accelerating to a point of absurdity and to a point of visibility, which is the interesting thing, because a lot of people are waking up to this and saying, what on earth is going on here?
Yeah, that's an interesting statement that you've just made there. It's becoming more visible. So the stuff that you've been talking about and writing about are the stuff that I've been broadcasting about for the last 2 years. A lot of people maybe that didn't buy into what we were saying or what our views were saying, well, I don't see that, Paul. I don't really see that happening where I am. Rick, I hear you, but I don't see it in my own life. A lot of people are starting to see the effects of this now, Paul, especially in their wallets, in their standard of living, becoming more difficult to make ends meet. But also, if you cast your eye around what's happening in society in general, France in no one particular, you know, some French, not everywhere, but some French towns and areas are unrecognizable to what they would have been 10 to 15 years ago. Homelessness is going through the roof right across the world. We covered stories this week about a tent city springing up in the central business district of Queensland in Australia, you know, which isn't exactly a down and out area. There's a tent city springing up there. Ireland at the minute, there's 1,100 men sleeping rough in the streets outside the International Protection Office in Dublin. No sanitation, no running water. Literally, it's like an open sewer down there. This is happening in Dublin as we speak. There's a story that I have here. I cover South Africa quite a lot with a guest of mine called Rob Hutchinson. They've had rolling electricity blackouts pretty much on a daily basis now for the last, you know, year, 2 years, showing no signs of going away, no stability with electricity in that country, unemployment running at 40 to 50% in some areas. Their water supplies are now compromised. Slowly, these things are becoming visible. You can't ignore the fact that you don't have electricity or that you have no clean running water or there's a tent city springing up in your local town centre. You can't ignore that stuff because it's visible.
It is, and I'm quite surprised, really, that people don't react more. You know, I know electricity bills have gone through the roof everywhere, in Britain as well. Here in France, they've ridiculous increases. People are paying huge bills, and, you know, it's a risk of putting small businesses out, you know, closing them down because they can't see it, like bakers and things like that that use a lot of electricity. It's a real problem, And yet people are not, why are they not on the streets? Why are they not doing anything? Well, perhaps because they've seen what happens when you do go on the streets. They saw the whole Gilets Jaunes, yellow vest uprising a few years back, which I was covering and involved with, in fact, in the end. And then they saw that all that happens is that the state sends in the riot police, and people lost arms and eyes and, you know, so they're frightened to go out in the street, or they think it won't achieve anything because that's all that happens. So it's where do they find themselves, people? Where are you when you feel totally disempowered? You feel that whoever you vote for, it doesn't change anything, or the same people will get in. Maybe you suspect that all the elections are rigged anyway, and you can't go on the streets because you think you're just going to get crushed. And it's a sorry state that we find ourselves in. And I don't know what's going to crack.
Well, let me ask you this. There's a couple of words. I'm noting them down here at the minute, just after you said that. Four words I want to throw at you. You know, why? That's the big question. Why is this being allowed to happen? Why are people not in the streets? Why are people not doing more about it? Because that's, I'm sure, something that you ponder a lot, something that I ponder a lot as well. I think it's a combination of maybe two things. Number one is desensitization. So this has been happening over a long period of time, and it's almost been a slippery slope to the position we're in at the minute. We haven't fallen off a cliff. We've been sliding down a slippery slope to get to the position we're in, becoming desensitized to atrocities, government corruption, genocides, the lockdown, the authoritarianism, the totalitarianism, the censorship. We've been slowly conditioned to that more over the last 4 years. And as well, what that's doing is it's breeding apathy. People are thinking, simply shrugging their shoulders and saying, well, we've heard about the new normal. Maybe this is the new normal. What can I do? What am I on my own? What is Paul Kudnick on his own? What's Rick Mund doing on his own there? Could apathy actually be our biggest enemy right now as a result of this new normal desensitized conditioning? Is apathy one of our biggest enemies? Never mind the globalists and the WEF.
I don't know if I'd call it apathy, but yeah, it's disempowering, certainly, and probably deliberate. It's like a blitzkrieg or shock and awe, which are the same thing, really, except conducted on a social level. There is so much coming at everyone at the moment. I think people are just overwhelmed, don't know what to do. Even people who are willing to be politically active don't know exactly how to do it and who they should be aligning themselves, because... there's all that other stuff going on all the time that we don't trust the political groups, even the opposition groups. We see through even the people that are supposed to be on our side. It turns out, no, they're not. They've been bought out as well. And you people are left in a sort of vacuum more than anything, a vacuum of powerlessness, which we've got to get out of, obviously. The big question as to how we do that.
Well, let me ask you about your own personal setup there in terms of Winter Oak. Okay, so Winter Oak is I can't say enough good things about it. It's an independent outlet that you run, you edit, you put pieces up there. Am I right in saying that you have obviously free rein over what you write about? You have free rein over what you post about, and I don't want to say for now, but I feel that slowly but surely. The screws are being tightened down on independent media outlets. At the minute, they're focusing in on places, for example, like GB News in the UK. And I know they're not an independent media outlet, but they're that sort of weird, vague in-betweenness between the BBC and, for example, any of the more alternate platforms. They're in that space and they're getting squeezed now by Ofcom. TNT, for example, is not regulated by Ofcom at this point in time. But if that was all to change with some digital acts being passed in the UK that we have to fall under that umbrella, they would probably come after us then. And then you operating as an independent with your own Substack, your own website, you're not regulated, obviously, by a regulator. But, if they've came for everybody else, eventually... they're not going to let people like you slip through the net, are they? Are you thinking about that in the long term? What will be the alternative if you get shut down or censored to high hell?
I'm assuming I will eventually, or even sooner rather than later. Who knows? Because there are a lot of new laws coming through. They're defining nearly everything that you say that criticizes the system as being online harm or hate speech and... They're certainly working very hard to provide the judicial framework for doing that. And that's why I put out such a lot of stuff so frantically. Partly is that I just want to get out everything that I know. I want to get it out there now and spread it as far as I can and, encourage people to download the books and PDFs and, and take in this information so that I have done what I can do. And if Winter Oak and my Paul Kudnick Substack and the rest of it all disappears over the night, at least I won't have been sitting on anything that I would like to have communicated.
Yeah, and communicate you do well. I want to spend the last couple of minutes just giving you as much promotion as I can. Paul has various outlets and platforms, like I've said. Winteroak.org.uk is a website. You can follow him on X or Twitter at Winter Oak Press. And you can check out his Substack, which I think is a really good place to start. Paul Kudenek, CUDENEC.substack.com. And as Paul rightly pointed out, all the works that he has there are available free of charge. But, you know, I'm a big believer in trying to get people to support other people that are in independent media. So if you have got it, you know, if you're still paying a TV license, you know, I know some people won't want to admit to doing that, but cancel the damn thing and take whatever money that you've saved, if you can afford to do it, and just reinvest that back into good, solid alternate media platforms, the like of what Paul's doing at the minute, because he does make all that work available for free. You're free to support him if you want to do that. And if you can't do that, I would strongly encourage you to, because he writes about weighty issues and he gets really deep into them. You know, we're talking about the superficiality of what people are discussing at the minute. You know, we've got the Kate Middleton business in the UK going on. I'm sure you've seen what's happening there. But then again, this week in France, you know, the talk of the country was, you know, about Macron's wife. Is she a man? And he's coming out with statements. No, she's a woman. And, you know, she groomed him effectively from he was a 15-year-old boy. And, you know, the people are talking about Macron's wife and William's wife. Hell's bells, man. There's a lot more other things we need to be focusing our time and efforts on. Would you not agree?
Well, yeah, certainly. Certainly there are, yeah.
Well, tell us this, what should we be focusing on? And in your humble opinion, if you told me, Rick, here's one thing I think you should be focusing on, or at least considering on, we've only got a minute left, what should be my primary concern at this point in time, or for anybody out there that's listening, what should we really focus on? Ourselves or stuff that's going on outside?
I think we need to focus on the outside to the point of understanding what we're trapped within, and that it is the huge racket that we're being lured into a digital slavery. And there are lots of detail that we could go into. But I think once you've realized that, the main thing we've got to do is find ways to get out of that. And I think we need to go back to real life, to connecting with people where we live. And we need to get together and talk about how we're going to be self-sufficient in food and how we're going to restore our local culture and get together and do stuff that's not online. At the moment, you're not online, you're not in the matrix. Mm-hmm. And just to rediscover our personal reality and enjoy life and be happy, like I was at the start of this program before we went into all the details. Well,
that's a perfect way to end it, because just as you said that, I said, well, listen, let's take it all right back to the start of the conversation. You were celebrating the fact that it was springtime, new beginnings, new life, you know, temperatures going up a little bit, the weather's improving a little bit. So get out there, get offline, get out there and get into the real world and fill your lungs full of nice, fresh spring air. How's that for recovery? We started off on a high, we went into the abyss, but we're back up on the mountaintop again. So for that, I appreciate all your contributions this morning, Mr. Paul Kudenek. Follow him on Winter Oak Press on Twitter. And stay tuned for more. James Freeman's coming in. Thank you very much, Paul, by the way, for your contributions. Hope you have a great day, and I'll be back in the morning at 10 a.m. UK time for more Locked and Loaded. So don't go away. Stay tuned for more here on TNT, Today's News Talk. We'll be right back.